Älskar du den här podden? Stötta den genom IKAs nya supporterfunktion. Det är helt upp till dig hur mycket du vill bidra med och det finns ingen bindningstid. Klicka på länken i poddbeskrivningen för att visa din uppskattning och stötta podden.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Part of me thinks it would be okay to live in Norway, but where I live in Colorado is really sunny, so...
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, the forecast for tomorrow looks promising.
Yeah, this morning was really nice.
Yeah.
Too nice.
And you're doing the Hampirukken tomorrow, the long one.
Yep.
The long one. And now we are recording, by the way, so
okay.
Clean up your political agenda.
Right.
Filter on.
I first met Megan Kimmel in 2014 as I was in Chamonix for an event with ASICS. The second time I met her was August this year, as I went up to the Tromsø Sky Race weekend. I ran the 32k long Tromsdalstind Sky Race, and Megan went for the 57k long Hampirukken Sky Race. My name is Magnus Ormestad and this is the Swedish outdoor podcast Husky. Husky is produced in cooperation with Naturkompaniet and it is powered by Nordic Green Energy, Sweden's greenest energy company with 100% renewable energy, sourced from solar, wind and hydropower. Find them at nordicgreen.se. Welcome to episode 24 of the Husky International series and a long interview with runner Megan Kimmel. If you want to know more about this, please head over to huskypodcast.com or find me on Facebook and Instagram at the handle huskypodcast.
But what are your initial thoughts on Tromsø, like the surroundings?
My initial thoughts on Tromsø are... kind of what I thought, in the way that you have the fjords, how Tromsø is about the size I thought, which was a small city really, and with lots of open land. But I didn't expect so many accessible ridge lines really. I expected more of just like a green land kind of thing. So yeah, I'm all the more impressed.
So a bit like sharper, rougher mountains or what?
Just rockier ridge lines. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yep.
Because this is like the first time in Scandinavia, or?
Yeah, it's my first time in all of Scandinavia.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
And for how many days have you been here?
I came here on Tuesday, so day three or four right now.
Is that, do you feel like acclimatized, or with the time zone and everything? And the,
yeah, it's interesting because I deal with jet lag a lot.
Yeah.
And actually before here, I was just in Spain, so I didn't have the jet lag to deal with.
Okay, so you're on the European time.
Yeah, it had been probably 4 days I was in Spain. But it was so amazing because then I realized the 24-hour day up here. And I thought that was just hard to adjust for. The first night I got here, I didn't go to bed until 2:30 a.m.
You got good curtains?
Yeah, I do have good curtains in the bedroom, but I didn't get here until late. So that I thought that was pretty funny because there's another bit of adjustment that you really have to do you want to be on a decent sleep schedule. For running, waking up and having a good race on race day.
Are you very aware of your like how many hours of sleep you get when it comes to like recharging and like preparing for a race?
Yeah, I'm not strict on anything, but I think if there's anything I am pretty strict on, it'd be sleep.
Yeah.
I've been in a time of my life where I haven't gotten much sleep consistently for a long time, and I think that has made me all the more sensitive. So yeah, I try to get a solid amount of sleep every night if possible.
And now, of course, like you mentioned, we are in the midnight sun region, but now I think it kind of like dips just below the horizon, I think.
Yep.
Dips just below the mountains, but still it's like, I don't know, 12 o'clock at night. It's like, you know, it's bright.
Yeah, I looked it up here. That first night, one reason I was up until 2 a.m. is because I was fascinated, and I think it started saying you have the midnight sun, which is above the horizon, and then I think it's a white day, which is the time frame where the sun goes below the horizon, but it's still light all day. Yeah, I could be wrong on that. But
how far up north do you have to get in the U.S. to kind of? You have that in Alaska, I guess.
Yep, in Alaska, I know for sure. And you get more sunshine the further you go north. Like, I've experienced late days in Montana, but I mean, it's dark by, you know, 10:30 at the latest kind of thing. So like dark. So.
If you sometimes you get the question, so what do you do for a living?
Yeah.
What's your answer?
Well, I always start by laughing like that because. Throughout my whole life, I've had a lot of different jobs, really, and I still do, even while I'm running. And I also find it hard to explain kind of what I do, and that because there's also a lot of different definitions to being a professional athlete, a trail runner in this case, in which to me, there can be a lot of different definitions in the way that I actually, you know, a person can be a professional, meaning they're sponsored. But then to me, to be a professional means you're actually, it's my profession, like it's what I'm paying my bills off of. And even within that, there's always been a fine line. It's only been a couple of years that I've been able to do that. So I always give a pretty long answer to how I make a living. And even this year, while I was racing during the summertime or in between seasons, really, I was fixing up a house in between, which becomes a job. So yeah, I always have pretty long-winded answers for that.
And fixing up a house that's at your home, what?
Yeah, it is. I bought and sold a house last year, last fall, and so I've now been a part of two different houses, but I always get into older houses, just it's mostly what's affordable, and in that case, there's always a lot of fixing up to do, and this one in particular did have a lot of fixing up to do, and within the house swap, I was able to put money from the last house into this house, which it desperately needed.
Is it the kind of fixing that you're into, is it like what you need to do or what you want to do, like aesthetically or the basics?
It's both for sure. It's always budget building, you know? And then, I mean, I definitely try to put an aesthetic eye to it and as much creativity as you really can. But that's a pretty basic level. Yeah.
And where is home?
Home is Ridgeway, Colorado. It's southwest part of the state.
And you are from Colorado?
I am.
But you're from Denver.
Yep, I grew up in Denver, the big city.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what was your childhood like? Were you a city girl?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much, I'd say. I was the youngest of four kids, and we always played a lot of city sports growing up. All of us participated in different ones. But then I was fortunate to have a grandma who had a place in the mountains about an hour from Denver. And so for being a city kid, I was definitely exposed to a lot of outdoors, especially summer weekends when I was growing up throughout my whole childhood.
Do you know what it was that kind of stuck to you? Like why you enjoyed spending time in the outdoors?
Yeah, I think part of it is just the natural desire to be, I was an active kid, so the natural desire to move around. And I really don't know. I just think it's to some extent, it's just built inside of us. You're either like a city kid or a country kid.
Running around like jumping in trees and so on. Yeah.
And oftentimes it actually switches. If you grow up in a city, you probably desire like the country or the mountains. But oftentimes if you grow up in the mountains, you often want that change to the city as you get older.
Wow, an escalator.
Yeah, people.
People. So were you the kind of kid that had a... Did you dream of adventures and expeditions and stuff like that?
I don't think I really thought about adventures and expeditions until I was in my later years of high school or the last part of my schooling. And then that's when I really started to be able to, like, my friends and I would go outdoors a lot more for fun. And I was breaking away from team sports and realizing kind of what you could do in the mountains. And that's when I just started taking all of my energy and putting it towards the outdoors.
But it was because you were, like, you played tons of sports, but as you kind of transferred into the outdoor area, did you do it for the experience of it, or did you do it for the physical, like, sports side of it, or the, you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely for the experience side of it first. I think it did have a big influence on me that a lot of my friends had shifted into people that spend a lot of time outdoors. And that's just what we did for fun, is we'd go to the mountains, we'd hike, we'd go on like ski hut winter trips. And then, you know, shortly thereafter, once my team sports ended when I was out of school, then I felt inherently that I wanted to be doing something. I always needed to kind of run for, I think, more than any just thing, just for like my mental state. It's always been a healthy thing for me, like brushing your teeth or something.
Yeah.
And so then I just started to combine those two together.
Did you have any as a kid or as a teenager, what did you have a plan, like, so this is what I want to do with my life, like, this is what I want to become when I grow up?
Interestingly enough, like, my very first memory of what I wanted to be when I grew up was maybe when I was like 4 years old. I mean, I'm sure it was shortly after the 1984 Olympics, and I wanted to be like a track star. I wanted to be an Olympic track star, and I actually never pursued that. I did a little bit of running in high school before university, but I never at that point didn't want to be any kind of like runner in particular at that time. So, but then after that very initial bit, I don't think I was one of those kids that wanted to be anything in particular. And once it came around to trying to get into higher education, like university, I thought I wanted to work with plants, doing, you know, landscape architecture or something like that. And then once I started pursuing that, I shifted a lot into a lot of different majors. So, I think I've always just been one of those people that's more about what life hands me rather than one particular path.
Yeah. But thinking about becoming a landscape architect, is that because you saw like nature as such an important part for you in your life, or that you really wanted to get your like your hands dirty in the soil? Did you enjoy that part?
Yeah, you know, at that time, and actually it's still true, that I really, really enjoy flower gardens. And to me, that was an avenue in which I could create nature in the city. I wasn't sure where I wanted to live, but that just seemed like one of the paths that was available to me at that time. And as soon as I started studying it, it's kind of just like the other themes of my life, where I was like, well, this is kind of a city job. I don't know if I want to do this kind, so maybe I'll move into these other paths. So landscape architecture, went to horticulture, went to forestry, went to biology, went to cultural anthropology.
Wow.
So
you have a lot of like basic courses in a wide range of...
Yeah.
You could be a good bartender, like speak about like anything with anyone.
Yeah, well, I spent a lot of time owning a coffee shop, so it's very similar. You just don't have, in general, you don't have that long of conversations as you do with tending bar.
But you had a interest in art as well. Was that when you were younger?
Yeah, when I was younger, I did actually. You know, I always enjoyed, simple sides of art, I would say. But And I always did that to kind of calm my mind, actually, as I think about it, until life kind of got too busy to provide for much leisure time like that.
Yeah. And when it comes to these like outdoor activities that you started participating in with your friends, like what kind of was there a time that certain activities kind of stuck out? Like, okay, so running is more fun than hiking, and climbing is more fun than that, and skiing is more fun than...
Yeah. I think once my friends started to backcountry ski or do more ski huts and stuff like that, then that really opened my eyes. Like, oh, wow, this is like what I really like to do, because you have, you're in wilderness, but you're also getting fantastic powder turns in Colorado. And then from then, shortly after that, that's when like that fitness thing started going into the mountains, and I lived in the mountains and I just wanted to get outside to experience and see more. So that's when I decided that, or I figured out that running's a way to go twice as far as you can on a hiking day.
Yeah.
And so that was a big reason I just started running then. It's because, you know, back then too, of course, I was holding down a job, and you can go out for an hour run and get pretty far. Rather than a hike, you just don't get so far before
fast
you go to work. Yeah.
And I guess like living in a mountain village, like a mountain town, if you live there all year round, that's going to be a really nice way to get to know the mountains and the nature, and to see them, what they look like beneath all that snow cover.
Yeah.
It's going to be really fun and interesting, and also it's going to be kind of good if you want to, just thinking of like avalanche security and avalanche awareness and stuff like that. So you know what's like beneath you, and you get to know the mountains that way.
Yeah. And for me, I think more than anything, it was just one of those things where you go on one trail and you're like, oh, well, what's on the other side of that mountain?
Yeah.
And really trying to experience a lot of like where you actually live.
Yeah. So what can you tell us about Colorado? Like your Colorado. The elevator pitch for Colorado, what was that?
Oh, man, Colorado is, it's a hard place to not love, because it's got a lot of sunshine. It has a lot of mountains, two different ranges, actually, and they're really easy to access for the most part. And they're not intimidating like, say, Alaska with grizzly bears, or other parts of the world with poisonous snakes. And, you know, they're really actually, they're incredibly user-friendly, basically. And the wildflowers are amazing. The fall colors are amazing. And, the skiing is fantastic, too. So, and there's some cool cities now, too.
what kind of elevation are we talking about?
Most of Colorado is at least like 6,000 feet. They call Denver, Colorado, the mile high city, because it's 5,280 feet above sea level, which is a mile. But a lot of the mountains are more around 9,000 feet. A lot of the mountain towns are a little bit lower, at about 8,000 feet. So that's between 2,000 and 3,000 meters.
Exactly. Yeah. what elements do you miss in Colorado? What do you don't have in Colorado?
What don't we have in Colorado?
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah.
Compared to the Alps have a lot more steep terrain and a lot more aesthetically beautiful peaks, I think. It really, to compare Colorado to the Alps is Colorado mountains seem to have the feel of almost the foothills, say around like Chamonix.
Yeah.
And then you have, you know, the glaciated peaks even higher. And in general, the Alps are a little bit more intimidating once you get into areas with glaciers and stuff like that, as far as summer and winter travel goes. So I think that the Alps are definitely have a little bit more of an intensity to them, which is why I also enjoy coming out to Europe.
But is it because I think sometimes that the Alps is, of course, everything that you said, like you got the intimidating peaks and you got the dramatic nature and scenery and so on. But you don't really have, of course, depending on how you define it, but you don't have wilderness in that way, like you do, for instance, up here in northern Scandinavia, where it's like proper wilderness. Is it the same in Colorado? Like, do you have like what you would call wilderness, or is it kind of well, you got mountain villages all over. You got like trails and roads and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's Colorado is a lot like Scandinavia, and that is a huge difference between the Alps and Colorado. It's a give and take. I mean, you have an incredible trail system around the Alps because of how many people have lived there over such a long time. But it's much more difficult to kind of get away and have your own solitude. While in America, we do have a lot of different categories, even of wilderness, where particular things are allowed and not allowed as far as motorized use. Okay. And some of those wilderness areas are pretty big, pretty extensive, like days of backpacking to cover the land. And so much more like Scandinavia in the way that you can go out on trails and not really see anyone.
And isn't Colorado kind of a hub when it comes to like outdoor trends or activities and so on, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd say
it is. Or at least
is
one of the hubs in the U.S., isn't it?
Yep, it's got, you know, quality rock climbing, quality skiing, and quality like mountain biking, obviously quality running, so it definitely makes it a major hub for outdoor sports.
And when it comes to the seasons back home, like, do you have a particular love? Do you still like more of, would you define yourself more of a kind of a winter type of person or a summer type of person when it comes to being back home?
Yeah, I mean, for a lot of years, I would have said I was a winter person. And as I get older, I enjoy the summer a little bit more all the time. But more than anything, I'm certainly a four seasons of the year kind of gal. I like the change of all of the seasons. And anymore, it's like, I kind of get sick of summer, and at some point I get sick of winter too.
In the end of every season, you constantly are looking forward to the next one.
Yes.
Yeah. This like backcountry skiing, for instance, did that take you like deeper into kind of the alpine activities, like when it comes to like climbing and so on, like rock and ice climbing or so? Did you do stuff like that as well, or?
Yeah, I would do a little bit of it all, but most certainly backcountry skiing has been my number one. And that, like, I would say backcountry skiing really opened my eyes to more than even just trail running went, as far as how to explore the mountains and what the potential is and what it is to actually be on top of peaks and wanting to do more of that. And then, you know, like, once again, in Colorado, they almost are, like, pretty well-defined differences between actually just, like, skiing, ice and rock climbing and, you know, your summer stuff, because we just don't have a lot of that glaciated technical glacier travel. So you kind of do one or the other. Where I live, where my home is, it does have good opportunity to do all those things. It's really close to the Ouray Ice Park. But for a long time, I've always concentrated on backcountry skiing because it was hard
so
to convince.
So much fun.
Yeah, it was hard to convince myself to go sit in the cold next to ice, and which is, and it's also a pretty scary, sketchy sport. Yeah. Now I'm trying to shift it into a little bit more of the things I haven't done. So
And now, because now you're a runner and you participate, like you compete in skyrunning and so on, you have background as a solid skier. So when it comes to like ski mountaineering, which is really taking off, at least in Scandinavia is really taking off, much thanks to Emily Forsberg, of course. And it's, of course, it's a super big thing in the Alps. But now I have a question, because I've interviewed Emily before and I asked her, like, don't you ever, like, when you're out, like, in your... on your like super light skis, don't you ever like really wish that you had proper skis on when you like walk in great conditions? But she was like, no, but these are my proper skis. Like, so she doesn't like, you know, go like skiing on a what you would call like powder skis and so on.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that? I mean, are you willing to kind of give up your proper skis for the light stuff, or would you feel like out of place on the light and fast stuff?
Yeah, no, I have a really hard time giving up my powder skis. To me, it's just like, that's probably what makes me the happiest of all the recreations I do, is just to make deep powder turns. So yeah, that will always be my number one. And I do totally appreciate the fast and light ski mountaineering skis these days. I mean, the performance on those things is so much better than I ever thought they would be.
Even in like a good powder day.
Well, see, that's just it. Like in Colorado, I think I haven't skied over in Europe, and I'm very, very curious. But I mean, Colorado snowpack is so different in the way that if it's a powder day, you're not gonna want to be on skinny skis, and in a lot of ways it's really not safe to be on skinny skis, because you're dealing with, like, you know, you're dealing with skis being like 1 foot, 2 feet deep in snow. You know, they just don't have the float that you want them to. But there's also plenty of days that you can get away with lighter skis. But, you know, if it's not powder, a lot of times it's just like breakable crust and stuff like that. So so if I'm really serious about like an adventure on most days in the wintertime, I definitely take my heavier gear, because it's just I know it's going to get me there and get me out, and I'm going to enjoy my turns. And ski mountaineering setups are more for really like spring snowpack.
But you have been participating in skimo competitions, right?
I've done a few. Yep. They're pretty. The sport is growing, but in general, they've been far from where I live, and it's really important, I think, to be around a ski area to get like kind of your heart rate up on groomed trails. And for a long time, I hadn't lived near a ski area. It'd be quite a drive to get to one. So now I kind of just have like, I wouldn't say it's a struggle, but an internal struggle about giving up my free days to go powder skiing, just to, you know, kind of like get up that heart rate and the intensity I do all summer racing, running. And so I guess I don't know where I'm at with ski mountaineering. I can say that ski mountaineering races are a lot of fun.
When it comes to running, like, did you ever...
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If there's one thing that my family and friends know me for, it's being an amazing gift giver. I owe it all to Celebrations Passport from 1-800-Flowers.com, my one-stop shopping site that has amazing gifts for every occasion. With Celebrations Passport, I get free shipping on thousands of amazing gifts. And the more gifts I give, the more perks and rewards I earn. To learn more and take your gift giving to the next level, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Set up a plan, like a strategy, or like, did you put up a goal that you wanted to follow when it comes to like becoming, because now you're, like we talked about, like you're a sponsored trail runner, or was it like you just rolled with the punches and like made the most of out of each situation?
Yeah, I think both of those things, you know. Actually, when I was like 20 years old, one of my experiences in the mountain town was I got a job at the Nordic Ski Center, and I had never Nordic skied growing up. I'd always just downhill skied with my family, and all of a sudden, I like realized how great Nordic skiing is, you know. And I actually, at that brief moment, I was like, I want to be a professional Nordic skier. In the United States, you know, that's a pretty late start for a Nordic skier in any country, but certainly in the United States, it's more of a college sport, really. But that really got me into the fitness fitness side of things. And it was my push for a long time to train, basically. And I did that in a lot of different ways. But then for running, I just fell into it. I was at a couple of citizen races around Colorado, and I ended up doing well at...
Well, that was like terrain races or trail races? Or?
Those were trail slash mountain races. And I ended up doing well. And then one opportunity led into the others. And like in the way of races, like what kind of race opportunities there were, and also sponsorship. At this point, I think I'm in like probably 10 years of being a sponsored runner. And within the sponsorship side of things, I've definitely kind of like taken what I have been given and worked through a lot of, worked my way up, I guess, in representing different companies within the sport.
Because you ending up with Essex, because I met you once before, like 4 years ago in Chamonix, and you ending up with Essex was kind of a pure coincidence, wasn't it? Like strike of luck, wasn't it?
Yeah, it
more
definitely
or less,
was.
Like, what can you say about that?
Yeah, I mean, really, the sport of trail running has changed a lot. It's changed a lot in 10 years' time. And there was not a lot of opportunity 10 years ago for any kind of sponsorship that would allow you to travel internationally. It still is pretty few and far between that get that opportunity. But back then, I mean, it was almost unheard of that a company would help you get out to international races, you know? Asics did kind of come out of nowhere at a time that I almost stopped racing because of my life situation. And just couldn't really afford to get to races. And so they kind of came out of the blue. And at that same time, the whole sport of trail running was really, really changing. And there were more people like coming out internationally, which they had in the past, without a doubt. But I just feel like the world itself was coming together at that time. Trail running was coming together at that time, and so the world of trail running was really coming together at that time. That kind of allowed me to go a little bit further, and has certainly played a role in being where I am now.
But is it because I don't know, this might be a kind of a strange question, but I can also imagine, I mean, is it really a like for you and your running, is it really a big difference? Like, would you say, like hypothetically, now that you're sponsored, like if you didn't have the sponsors, I'm guessing you would still perhaps run as much, but you would run in different places maybe.
Yeah. I think,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think all of us runners run for a way bigger reason than, you know, any kind of accolades like that, you know. So I would certainly be a different runner, and I'd be around home more, which is not a bad thing, you know. And I think my pursuits would still be about the same as far as my desires to do the distances I like to do and the type of terrain that I like to do. I don't think anything's changed as far as that goes. Just certainly that I have the opportunity to go other places and really to, you know, race against other athletes from around the world, which has always been like an objective and a pleasure about being in my situation.
Because now you're in the Salomon team, like this is the first season. What does that mean, do you think? Like, what will it mean for your development, like teaming up with like we said before the interview, with like Max King and Emily and Kilian and the likes, people like that?
Yeah, I have to say, it's just like it's grown into something that I feel like is actually a real honor, just because of the company itself and how they carry themselves, what they do for the sport, and just that they are a mountain-based company, always have been. And I think it just reflects in so many positive ways that I feel proud and lucky to be with the company. All of their athletes are stand-up individuals and the strongest in the sport. So, yeah, once again, it's just
an honor,
yep.
What type of races attracts you? Like, what do you want to do? Like, where do you want to, where do you like to race?
Yeah, that's just it. I like a lot of different kind of running. You know, there's no in particular one thing I like. I certainly, obviously, am attracted to the mountains and getting on top of peaks and stuff like that. And it's really amazing that we have races that like allow us to do this. But I also really like nice single track where you can go really fast on, kind of like Bend, Oregon style, or you know, Marin County style. And I like going to places that I haven't been. You know, I definitely lean towards the side of places that aren't so hot. Like, I probably wouldn't be so passionate about going to rainforests and doing adventure running there. But other than that, I really kind of thrive off of seeing new places and experiencing different landscapes.
And when it comes to distances, because you compete and you do verticals and you do sky running and marathons and so on. Have you done ultras as well?
I've dabbled a bit in ultras. Like for probably the last 4 years, I've done one ultra to kind of like cap off the end of my season. And that's kind of been by design. And I've been trying to keep it to the sub-ultra distance for a long time because it's my first passion. And also because I feel like there's plenty of time for ultras as I get older here. And now I am at that kind of borderline where I feel like I am now going into my ultra years, basically. And leaving some of the short distance, a lot of the short distance stuff behind.
So what are you aiming at? Like any particular races or tours and stuff that you want to tick off?
For me, I've always really, I mean, it's kind of a given, but I've always really enjoyed the European side of racing. It's just such a cultural entity there that lacks in the United States. So, yeah, I mean, if I'm going to go to do a 100-miler, I want it to be UTMB.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, a prelude to that is the CCC. So those two things, I think, are kind of like what I would love to be my main concentrations. And then I haven't really taken the time to figure out which other races I am attracted towards within throwing in some more races, you know, within the next couple of years of pursuing those two.
Speaking of differences between the U.S. and the Alps, when it comes to skyrunning, where is skyrunning in the U.S. right now?
Well, my finger's not exactly on the pulse this season. I participated in I think one of the first two couple years when the U.S. Skyrunning Continental Series was getting going. And it's really hard, I think, to get similar skyrunning in the United States because of our regulations on public land. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of permit issues and stuff like that. So, and just our natural terrain, just once again, is not as steep as the Alps are. So, but you know, like, you know, here in Tromsø, perhaps it's like similar terrain, but like our far off peaks are like fairly, are a lot of those peaks are regulated, in which you have to have permit. The permit process is really difficult.
You can't let up 500 people with trail shoes ripping it.
Yeah, exactly. So I know there's a lot of emphasis going into boosting up the U.S. Skyrunning Series, and hopefully the people that make the decisions are going to start seeing the progressive side of things and open up some of the terrain that is easily accessed for these kinds of races. So I think it's a work in progress.
And speaking of mountains and similarities and dissimilarities, we're now in Tromsø, which is kind of a mountain village in a way, coastal but also a mountain village. And you've lived in Silverton and now you live in Ridgeway. Do you feel like, are you attracted to mountain towns, like small cities in the mountains?
Yeah, I certainly was 20 years ago. And once again, as I get older, I kind of am gravitating towards more people and more people and more people. Like now I pretty much joke that I'm going to move to the city when I'm 80 years old and retire there because I think it's a great time. You just be close to everything and you go see theater and stuff like that. But yeah, certainly my heart and soul is in smaller places that are closer to the wilderness.
Is that like moving around like that? Is that like traveling and so on, racing in different countries and so on? Is that important for your... Like, what do you pick up in each? Because you've spent a lot of time in Nepal, for instance, I know, and in South America, New Zealand. Do you like? Are you an assembly of different type of running cultures or different type of inspiration that you picked up from all these places, or you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think so. But I think one really amazing thing about mountain culture is that it's all really open and friendly. You know,
it's no matter where you go, it's like basically the same.
Yeah, pretty laid back, open and friendly. I think you just have to be with your environment and stuff like that, you know, and everyone kind of just has the same eyes that they people just want to help you and make you feel at home. So it's almost it's those differences, but almost that similarity that makes you just want to go meet and go to new places because of that commonality, I guess, in between.
Is it ever an issue to kind of readjust yourself, like coming to a new place? Like, for instance, you haven't been in Scandinavia before, and now you're going to compete tomorrow. Like, do you feel like, do you have like some, I don't know, rituals mentally or physically or whatever? Like, or is it just like, no matter where you go, you can just, as long as you're relaxed and you get good rest, you can go out there and run and perform? Or is it an issue to readjust?
Yeah, I think because I've done this for 10 years, I mean, perhaps back in the day, I was a little bit more like more cyclic with what I did before races, but you do it long enough. And I think the most important for me is to know that no one thing in particular actually does make that much difference. You know, like I've had races where I've got no sleep the night before and had a great race. I've had other races that have been disastrous because I haven't had sleep the night before. So who's to say that sleep makes a difference? And then, you know, to try to keep one kind of food like on the menu before a race. I mean, that's...
Oh, they don't have spinach.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's a pretty hard way to travel too. So I definitely try to just keep an open mind and like do my best I can to take it easy before a race for sure. But I always break the rules, like this morning.
And I'm curious about like your the inner debate that I think
I always break the rules, but not in races. I am a stickler for playing fair.
Megan does not cut corners. When it comes to your, because I think all, perhaps all runners, and especially runners in your league, have a lot of like the mental part of running, like the inner debate between your mind and your body. Like for instance, I just did an interview with Stian, for instance, and we talked about that as well. Like, if you, because I sometimes think that you can see the, if you, while racing, you see your body as kind of a machine and your brain is like in the driving seat and you just push the gas pedal. Like, okay, so the body is like screaming at you. It's like, I'm tired, I can't move, you know, my legs are hurting. But the mind is up there, like in the driving seat, just driving seat, like pushing the gas pedal all the time. Mm-hmm. Is that something you are good at, or is it something that you have improved, or what's your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a huge part of racing, right? It's a huge part of everything that we do, especially as you get to a higher level, whether it's, you know, art, whether it's, you know, making music or whatever, is like letting your mind kind of strengthening your mind, I guess. And so I think certainly it's something that I've used and I've definitely gotten better at over the years. I just don't think you can underestimate the power of the mind, really.
Is it something that you, is that one of the reasons that you enjoy running like this? That connection that you're able to make?
Yeah, I think so, for sure. Yeah.
It's actually I quoted Max King when I interviewed him. He said something like, while training, you listen to your body, and while racing, you tell it to shut up. And I think it's a good quote, because of course you can't push the gas pedal all the time. Like, you gotta relax as well.
Yeah,
but it's a good quote, I think.
Definitely.
but you do have like a mental difference, like a difference in your like mental like state of mind going out just for a run, you know, free time, and on race day, there is a difference for you, or is it the same? Like, do you have the same mentality?
No, there's definitely a different mentality, just depending on really what the race and the race objective is, I think. And also the distance. I mean, to me, as I get into like the longer distances, I think it's all the more important to make sure you just have a good, fun day, you know, because if you if you're too intense about what you got going on, just depending on the race itself and the terrain and everything, that can just maybe get you into a little bit more trouble than if you just go out there to enjoy the day. Yeah.
Like mentally, where do your thoughts go, like when you're out on a long haul?
Yeah, I try to actually not let them, like, I just try to silence my mind and
be in
just,
the moment.
Yeah, say be in the moment, exactly, you know, because it's so easy to let your mind go in like a million different directions, and it will to some extent. But I mean, to me, yeah, I guess it does have that side of a meditation, which that's kind of the idea, is to like not let your mind just like go as wherever it wants to, is to kind of like still the mind and yeah, enjoy where you're at that time.
Another strange question. What does your reactor look like? Like, what does your core look like? the energy that keeps you going.
Yeah, I'm not really so sure about that reactor right now. I would say right now, in general in my life, it's pretty chaotic. But that must be do something, like that must itself do something positive. And I guess like deep down, if that's how I feel about my core, then I must also like do all right with kind of that kind of like crazy energy that's going on in there. And so, yeah, I think at some points in my life, I would say like it's been a little bit more solid, but I think I also now at this point in my life, with a lot of travel, with a lot of stuff going on in life and all of that, and I think that it must be that deep down, like pretty solid core that keeps like all the craziness that's going on around me set in. Does that make sense?
It's kind of a mixed fuel reactor.
Yeah. Sometimes it just depends on the day, unfortunately.
And like your strength and your weaknesses as a runner, like both mentally and physically. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I used to, yeah, I think that at this stage of my running, I have a lot of change going on. I really honestly do think that as of this season, I just don't have a lot of speed left in me. I'm 37 years old now, and I just, like this season in particular, I've noticed a big difference. If nothing else in my desire, I just don't even care so much about like, you know, running up like hill fast as I can, you know. And intervals just aren't quite as exciting as they used to be for me. And I do look a lot like I look forward to the more adventure side of things and taking it slow and making it through a long day. I've always enjoyed that, but I've always been in the time frame that I wanted to use my speed first. So I'm not exactly sure where my strengths lie right now, except for that I certainly have had the passion to do what I've wanted to do for a long time, and it still remains. And mentally, yeah, it almost goes hand in hand with that physical part, where like right now I think a lot of me is just like, well, what am I doing, you know? Like, I like part of my mind is really sad that like my speed, that I'm leaving speed behind, even though mentally I've been preparing for this like particular year and this transition for quite a few years. So part of me is sad, but then a big part of me is kind of happy. I'm like, all right, like I'm getting older, I don't have to do that anymore, you know? So looking forward to doing other things is what that is.
But do you have like adventures and stuff like that on your list? Like, I want to embark on this like a 10-day excursion or something, or?
Yeah, I've gotten really, really busy racing in the last few years, and that's a huge reason I actually want to go more into the ultras, is to not be racing quite as much, because I do feel like I haven't had that that space to create and to go about adventure runs, because I'm always kind of in between races. So I started with that desire before I started racing when I was 20 years old. It was just all about going out for fun adventure runs, but then I wanted to harness like the opportunities that I had had and see how far I could push myself. And so, yeah, now I'm starting to think more about those adventure runs. And, of course, now we have this whole FKT phenomena that's started to happen. And
what's that?
FKTs, like fastest known times.
Oh, yeah.
Which I actually have a hard time, like, caring about so much, because to me it's just like, oh, gosh, like, how come we always have to make it about who's the fastest? Yeah. Like, you know, isn't the point of, like, going on a big adventure run, like, to, like, kind of slow down and enjoy, like, where you're at, smell the flowers, take a picture? But it's, you know, it's part of human beings to push, and it's ultimately a healthy thing.
Yeah.
So whether it's just going out for adventure runs or pursuing some FKTs, like, time will tell, but hopefully I do have the opportunity to do some of those, like, within my ultra training as well. Yeah.
So what does it look like? You're setting up your schedule for the coming. Are you even able to plan, like, 1 or 2 years ahead, or is it just this season now and then let's see?
Yeah, I think how things have worked out for this season, I'm certainly in a situation where I just I'm waiting to get through this season, and then off season will come, and that's when I can really start to think about, like, time frame for different races, and just some, you know, just where my personal life is at, and be kind of realistic with what I can pursue next year.
Yeah,
and I thought about something as far as the physical and mental side and my mental strengths, and without a doubt, like, my personality and part of my strength and weaknesses mentally is that I'm pretty easygoing. Definitely go with the flow. I definitely, like, but I'm also really focused. So I have kind of like a silent focus, really, but ultimately I know that no one thing matters. And I think that can be really important, like, when pursuing racing.
Yeah, we didn't even get to the weakness part.
Yeah.
But is that, are you a competitive person? Or is it like that you're so easygoing that there's no prestige, and that kind of, I don't know, could it lead to you not being super competitive? And from a racing perspective, maybe that's a weakness or what?
Yeah, I kind of have this theory that our strengths are our weaknesses, you know?
Wow. So a lot now of... we're getting really philosophical.
Yeah, you know? So, like, if you're, you know, the beautiful thing, like, it can be a weakness. Let's just take this one example of being pretty easygoing, you know, where it can, of course, you can see the weakness right there. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, who cares? But the strength of it is that you don't let one thing get you down, you know?
In the long run, it's got to be positive to not be, you know, allow yourself to be let down for a small thing.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, if you have to, you're unable to finish a race, you would just shrug it off, I guess, or?
Yeah, well, you know, I guess I don't think, like, shrugging off is quite as, like, on to the way I would look at it as taking the experience for what it is and learning from it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that is, if you're too focused on one thing, I think it's easy to, like, forget about that and be, like, so down on your bad race that you don't realize really what you gained from it. And there's always things to gain, you know, that things happen. Most things happen kind of for a reason, most things happen and you do learn something from them. So you might as well just take the lesson and become stronger for it, for sure.
And now your thoughts on Tromsø Sky Race. Like, you're doing the Hamperokken tomorrow?
Yeah.
The long one?
Uh-huh.
What do you expect from it? Have you been out, like, doing some recognition, or have you tried parts of the course?
I kind of struck it lucky with the place I've been staying for, like, the last few days, that it was, like, 5 houses away from the first part of the race, so I was able to hop on the race course, like, very easily when I first got here. And so I went up for the first part of that a couple times because I didn't have to drive anywhere, and and then, of course, you can see the first peak from the time you're, like, flying into Tromsø. So even before I realized that was the course, I was like, oh man, I gotta go run that regardless, you know, so easy access. And then I did have the luck of getting a good view at one point in the last few days where I saw the second peak out there, and that looks great. And I think it's a really well-designed course in a lot of ways, but super cool that that peak is so far out there. Like, I feel like I'm really going for an adventure, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be a pretty wild day. It looks like a lot of different terrain. Yeah, I think that further out peak, I'm sorry, I can't pronounce the name. I can't remember the name right now. Hamperoken. It looks just like a great attribute to the race because it just looks like fun to me.
Yeah. Coming to a race like this, like, because I, you know, walking around, like, in this hotel and walking around town, you see a lot of racers and you hear a lot of languages, like people like literally coming from all over the place to race here. Is it like, do you know a lot of people coming here? It's like, oh hey, you know, I met you half a year ago, 1 year ago, something like. Is it like a small family?
Yeah, in fact, I haven't made it over the bridge to be in town yet. I do that move after this time with you. But already I was in town a couple days ago, and I saw a friend from a couple years ago, race that we both did, lives in Alaska, and I had no idea he'd be out here. So, it is a small community like that, and I know once I get back into town, I'll be running into more people that, like, I know, and then also people, like, you recognize and don't know so well. So, that's always a fun part.
It's a social thing as well.
Yep, it is. You know, then the more I've done it, the more I've really gotten to know people better and better, and it just makes it all the more fun. Yeah.
Your parking time is running out.
Right.
But thank you so much for taking your time to do this, and best of luck tomorrow.
Thank you so much.
See
Thanks
you
for
around.
Having me. Uh-huh. Sounds good.
Husky is produced in cooperation with Naturkompaniet, and it is powered by Nordic Green Energy, Sweden's greenest energy company with 100% renewable energy sourced from solar, wind and hydropower. Find them at nordicgreen.se. The music is made by Joel Mull.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.